is coming out of our mouth, but that's what makes it even more exciting, right? So, first of all, good morning. I greet you on behalf of your sister congregations all across Franconia Conference. It's good to be here with you today. And as I'm here, I want to start out with a question. It may seem a little awkward, but you don't have to really answer it. The question is, do you know what it's like to feel out of place? Cheryl, you and I have a similar story. This week, I was in a van full of pastors who I love and appreciate very much. But as we were traveling, all of a sudden, the conversation turned to, you got it, politics. And very quickly, it became clear to me that I was the only one in that van with my political opinion. And I have to say, I stayed quiet in order to be a peacemaker, because the things that wanted to fly out of my mouth were just not appropriate. And it's kind of funny. I plastered a smile on my face, and I sat there quietly. And I judged my fellow pastors. I criticized them. I worried about the future of their churches. You know, I can't even remember all the things I thought. And I thought to myself, that is a really interesting way to be self-righteous here, Jen. Sitting in this car full of people who have never ever once criticized you and have always ever respected you and your opinion. But you feel out of place, so you're making them out of place. Just saying. There's nothing easy or comfortable about feeling as though you don't belong. And it's even hard, and it's hard enough to walk into a room full of strangers and feel that way. But it's even more painful to walk into a room of people you know and feel out of place. The story of Zacchaeus is one in which a lot of things, including Zacchaeus, are out of place. Oh, we're going to go on up to our slides. We're going to switch to the next one. It's kind of like that Sesame Street song. Do you remember? One of these things is not like the other. One of these things just doesn't belong. Can you tell me which thing is not like the other before I end this song? I remember that as a kid, watching Sesame Street every day, and there was always one of these examples on there, and I always felt bad for the thing that was different. I'm just saying. And as chief tax collector, Zacchaeus was different. He was out of place, so you can imagine I felt sorry for him as a kid growing up. It also helped that I was always on the short side, so I felt his pain. Got to flip. Jewish tax collectors like Zacchaeus were scorned by their Jewish peers for a couple of reasons. One was that they were known for cheating taxpayers. And two, they worked for the Roman government. They were considered collaborators with the enemy, traitors to their own people. Tax collectors weren't even allowed to worship in the inner part of the temple with the other Jewish people. They had to stay outside with the Gentiles. Tax collectors were sinners of the worst kind. Now, in our story, we heard that Zacchaeus was trying to see Jesus, but he couldn't because of the crowd. So in order to see Jesus, Zacchaeus ran ahead of the crowd. Now again, here's something that's out of place. You can tell me I'm wrong about this, but in my mind, adults don't run, do they? Adults run when they're exercising, and they run when they're in grave danger. But other than that, when you have to catch a plane or a bus or get to a store real fast, you walk really, really fast, usually dragging your kids behind you if you have them. But we don't usually run when we're in a hurry. We walk. But Zacchaeus ran. He ran to a tree and climbed up it. So if running was out of place for adults, imagine climbing a tree. That would have to be way out there for an adult. Now, what I want to know is, why didn't Zacchaeus stand on a wall or look out a second floor window or climb up to the top of a roof and look down like people do with parades? Why did he climb a tree? He's out of place. Climbing a tree, man, that's really going out on a limb, isn't it? Cha-ching! Sorry. I know. We can switch slides. So Jesus came and he looked up into the tree. You can switch. There it is. And he said, Zacchaeus, come on down, for I'm going to your house today. Now here, there's two more things that are out of place. First, how did Jesus know Zacchaeus' name? And second, how rude to invite yourself to someone's house. I was taught that you invite people to your house, but you never, ever invite yourself to someone else's house. And then Jesus says, Zacchaeus, hurry on down. I must stay at your house. Why the intensity? It's a little out of place. Jesus is just passing through Jericho, and now all of a sudden he's intense. I have to stay at your house, Zacchaeus. Now, this is the part that really blows my mind. I imagine this next part kind of like the children's song sets it up to be. Jesus looks up and he's like, Zacchaeus, you come down. That's how we sung it, right? That's how I learned it as a kid. Wagging the finger, stern voice. Now, when I was a child and I was about to get in trouble, my mom did this. Jennifer Lynn, yep, the full name. Zacchaeus, Jennifer Lynn, come here right now. Uh-huh. I knew I was about to get in trouble. And if Jesus did it that way to Zacchaeus, wouldn't Zacchaeus have felt the same way? If Zacchaeus had something to hide, or if he thought he were about to get scolded, why would he come down quickly and joyfully receive Jesus? Verse 6 says, whoops, forgot to open my Bible, that Zacchaeus hurried down and was happy to welcome him. No one who is about to get in trouble is happy about it. Even if you know you deserve the scolding, usually there's a sense of dread or remorse or hanging of the head in humility. There's not a happy reception of the authority figure. But Zacchaeus's happy reception seems a little out of place. Anyway, Jesus goes on to Zacchaeus's house and hangs out for a bit. And of course, the crowd grumbles because Jesus is hanging out with a sinner, a tax collector. Now, ironically, this is the only part that seems in place in the whole story. Because throughout the Bible, the crowd is always grumbling and mumbling and complaining. And Jesus is always hanging out with sinners like prostitutes and tax collectors. So this is the part that's in place. Go figure. I was taught that Zacchaeus repented of his evil tax collector ways and offered to make amends by giving half of his earnings to the poor and paying back four times if he cheated anyone. Now this again seems out of place because in Luke 18, the chapter right before, a rich ruler comes to Jesus and says, hey Jesus, what do I have to do to be saved? And Jesus says, obey the laws. And the man says, hey, I've done that since the time I was a child. So then Jesus says in verse 22 to 23, there is still one thing lacking. Sell all that you own and distribute the money to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and then come follow me. Why didn't Jesus tell Zacchaeus he had to give up everything he owned, all of his riches, all of his wealth? One of these things is not like the other. As we continue with the text and further study, I realized also a couple other things that were out of place. Don't you love when people tell you everything in the Bible is out of place? You're like, what? Take her off the pulpit, quick. All right, here's the deal. Zacchaeus' name means righteous. That's a little out of place, wouldn't you say, for a tax collector? Maybe his mom had high hopes for him. I don't know. Oh, and get this. Different translations of the story read differently. Let's look at the next slide. We have three versions. And if you look in Luke 19, verse 8, according to the NIV version, Zacchaeus says, look, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of everything, I will pay back. Then Luke 19, 8 says, here now, or look, Lord, half of my possessions I will give to the poor. And the New King James Version says, look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor. And if I have taken anything, I restore it fourfold. What does that change mean as we read it? Look at that and think about it for a minute. The Greek version says, look, Lord, I give half of my possessions. It's in the present tense. In Jewish tradition, scripture is not merely read and applied. It is debated and examined from multiple angles. Like a gem, the sages say, the Torah has 70 faces. We turn it around and examine each angle carefully. And I think we should do the same with the story. So today, I'm inviting us to imagine this text a bit differently, but remember that the point, the main idea, is still the same. The Son of Man came to seek and save what was lost. I believe Luke clearly intended for these multiple angles. Does it make any difference that in the Greek, the language in which Luke was writing, Zacchaeus' actions are in the present rather than the future tense? Zacchaeus says, I give, rather than I will give. With I will give, Zacchaeus, it seems like Zacchaeus is guilty and he's about to make amends for what he's done. He's about to change his ways from this point on. When we look at I give, it implies that Zacchaeus is already doing this. Zacchaeus is already giving half of what he has, half of his income is already going to the poor. Is it possible that Zacchaeus is an honest tax collector? Verse 2, when Zacchaeus is introduced, he's introduced as the chief tax collector and he was rich. He's not rich because he was a chief tax collector. Does that make sense? The way tax collection worked back then, and I'm going to try and paraphrase it because it's really complicated, but basically a rich person in an area would win by auction the right to pay the Roman government the taxes. So as chief tax collector and a wealthy man, Zacchaeus would give the Roman government their taxes ahead of time for like 2 years or whatever. Then he would be able to collect taxes from everybody else in that area. And if he collected more, he got to keep. That's why people thought that they were cheaters. But in addition to that collection of the taxes that he already paid the Roman government would give him interest because it was treated like a loan. Complicated, right? So Zacchaeus would have given the Roman government money. The Roman government, at the end of 2 years, would have given Zacchaeus back interest. But in the meantime, Zacchaeus would have collected the money that he had given to the Roman government. So maybe Zacchaeus didn't collect over and above. Maybe he collected the right amount. And maybe he was living off of his previous wealth. Or maybe he was living off of the interest that the Roman government was giving him back. We don't know. Doesn't say. Zacchaeus' story is usually told with the assumption that what the crowd believes about Zacchaeus is true. What the crowd believes about Zacchaeus is true. He's a crook. But what if he isn't? That Jesus invites himself to share a meal and perhaps to spend the night with Zacchaeus is not an imposition, but it's an honor. In calling Zacchaeus by name and insisting that he will lodge with him, demanding to lodge with him, Jesus grants Zacchaeus social approval, which he clearly did not have based on the grumbles of the crowd. Zacchaeus is delighted rather than shamed by this recognition, which makes me think he has nothing to hide. That's why he could receive Jesus happily. He had nothing to hide from Jesus. Christine Pohl explains in Making Room, Recovering Hospitality as a Christian Tradition, that the role of host is empowering because it is an acknowledgement that one has rightful access to a place of meaning and value, and that one has the authority to welcome other persons into this place. The host role affirms that what you have and what you offer are valuable. So Jesus is giving Zacchaeus a chance to say that he is valuable, what he has is valuable to others. Before the meal, Zacchaeus stands to set the record straight. He doesn't deny that he's wealthy. He wants Jesus to know that. But he also wants the people listening and Jesus to know that in this case, half of what he gives or earns is given to others. It's given to the poor. Zacchaeus doesn't claim perfection, but he says, if I have cheated others, or when I have cheated others, depending upon the translation, I pay them back 20%, four times the amount. I pay them back four times the amount. The Leviticus code only demanded 20% repayment. When tax collectors stood among the crowd at the Jordan River when John was calling folks to repentance, and they asked, what should we do in response? John instructed them to collect no more than the amount prescribed to you. Maybe Zacchaeus was there, and maybe he was already collecting no more than the amount prescribed to him. John didn't call the tax collectors to resign their positions despite their collusion with Rome. Instead, he said, deal fairly with the people and one another. And I think it is possible to see Zacchaeus in this story not so much as a sinner transformed, but as I had long understood. But maybe, just maybe, Zacchaeus is an unlikely hero like the Good Samaritan or the Roman soldier. Ponder the last few lines. Today, salvation has come to this house because he too is a son of Abraham. Jesus speaks this to Zacchaeus, but he uses the third person. He doesn't say, today salvation has come to this house because you too are a son of Abraham. He says, because he too. I imagine that the crowd has followed, and when I was in India, we would preach and pray, and then we would go back to the pastor's house, and a crowd of hundreds of people would follow us. They'd surround the house, they'd look in the windows, they'd lean in the doorways, they'd get as close as possible to see and hear what we were talking about. And I kind of imagine that's how the crowd was. They were looking in the windows, listening in the doorway. And Jesus, instead of saying, salvation has come to you, Zacchaeus, he's addressing the crowd that's surrounding them. Salvation has come to him and to this house. The crowd is the intended audience. The judgy, grumbling crowd who can't separate sinner from tax collector is meant to listen in. Jesus confers a new identity on Zacchaeus. He's no longer a sinner or even a publican, but first and foremost, he is a son of Abraham. Read from this direction, Jesus' statement that today salvation has come to this household sounds very different. Zacchaeus is an outsider who becomes a disciple, welcomed in from the margins. Perhaps this is less a story of conversion and more a story of inclusion. In identifying him in this way, Jesus restores Zacchaeus to his community, whether or not the community is ready for him. And Jesus sums it all up by saying that he has come to seek and save those who are lost. To be lost isn't simply a matter of being a sinner. When something is lost, it is out of place. It's out of its proper place. I was in a store one time, and there was a little boy crying and wandering around an aisle, and I came up to him and I said, are you lost? Can I help you? Are you lost? And he said, I am not lost. My daddy is. Those who are lost, and that has included all of us at one time or another, are simply out of place. We may not be in the place where God has created for us to be. The Greek word Jesus uses here when he says to save the lost means rescue, save from harm, heal, or make whole. Doesn't necessarily mean save from sin. That's a part of it, but it's not the whole part. Salvation is the continual change that Jesus brings to our life right now and into the future. Jesus brings a new power to live in right relationship with God and others right now. Jesus brings wholeness to our brokenness right now. Jesus brings new purpose as he invites us to join him in his mission of seeking and saving the lost right now. So what's out of place? This question is easy to answer in our current political and church culture. There's lots out of place. But maybe the harder question to answer is, what enslaving prejudices do we bring that hold us back from others? What enslaving prejudices was I bringing that was holding me back from my fellow pastors in that van? We know Zacchaeus or others like him. Do we more easily hold on to our assessments than to change our opinions about them? Do we pigeonhole people and interpret all their present behaviors upon our past conclusions or assumptions about them? Move to the next slide. I forgot I wanted to put that up. Take a look at this picture. If we had seen this picture the first time we heard the story of Zacchaeus, how might that have changed our understanding of the story? Jesus is receiving a righteous Jewish man and going to his house. Keep going. So, one of these things is not like the other. One of these things just doesn't belong. Can you tell me which thing is not like the other before I end this song? Clearly, the hat is different from the sunglasses. But all of these objects are colorful items people wear. All of these objects provide protection from the sun. And how cool to have something protect the head from the sun, in addition to the eyes. Maybe, just maybe, as followers of Jesus, we are invited to notice what is out of place and work toward restoring significance and relationship. As we enter this week, let us notice who and what is out of place in and around us. And like Zacchaeus, may we generously give of the time, energy, and resources we have to join Jesus' mission of seeking and saving the lost. There's a time of silence, and I have some questions that can go up on the screen. If you could flip forward, please. Yeah, just click to the next slide. And if you want to use your time of silence to look at these questions and think about them, feel free. If you want to use it in another way, that's fine too.